This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Congress is getting back to work next week after its August recess, with the debt ceiling and funding to avoid a government shutdown high on the agenda. And they may have to take up a funding bill to provide billions of dollars in relief aid to victims of Hurricane Harvey. President Trump was in Texas earlier this week to review the storm's destruction and is planning to go back this week. Joining us to discuss these and other top political stories are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
It is my pleasure.
And before we start the discussion, Ken, what is the trivia question?
Well, with all the talk about all this focus on Texas, I thought I would do a Texas-related trivia question. Who was the last presidential candidate born in Texas who was later named as a running mate for vice president?
Okay. And if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. And the first correct caller is going to win a political junkie button. And Ken, let's start with that. The response to Texas at this point, your thoughts on this?
Well, you know something, I mean, everybody's hearts and souls are go out to all the people who were suffering, and we have no idea the extent of the suffering. I mean, I think the last I saw was 38 dead, but I suspect, and I guess we all suspect, that they're
going to go higher.
So many, yeah. So many bodies being found that it's just incalculable, and also just heartbreaking and heart wrenching. But politically, I think you have to go back to what happened in 2005 in Hurricane Katrina and the Bush administration response. I almost feel that that was the beginning of the end of the Bush administration's goodwill in this country, especially the famous picture of Bush flying over New Orleans in a Air Force, in his presidential plane, looking down on the people. And I know that the Trump people were very determined not to make those kind of mistakes. So, yes, Trump talking about the size of the crowds, you roll your eyes, and Melania Trump walking into the plane, with those 6-inch stiletto heels, and you roll your eyes on that, too.
Yeah, but when she got off the plane, she was wearing sneakers, if you saw the next picture.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. So everybody's saying that, this was a bad sign. And I think if you're looking for a bad thing to say about Trump, then you'll find it. But I think all in all, the response has been good. The response has been very good. I mean, again, aside from Trump's self-congratulations, and of course, we have a lot more to go, but I think they learned the lessons that the Bush team did not learn in Katrina. And in fact, many of the veterans of Katrina and FEMA are working in the Trump administration, which is a good sign.
Yes.
The only bad sign, I would say, though, is that if you look at the Trump budget, there's a lot of money cut out of FEMA. And of course, that's not what the president is talking about this week.
Yeah, I agree with Ken. I think the response has been much better than 2005. And the imagery, of Bush, I think it was in Marine One, actually, where it was flying over New Orleans. But anyway, it was a bad image. The only argument I would have with President Trump and how he's handled this thing is when he went to Corpus Christi and made the speech. And he really didn't talk. I think people are listening for a president to talk in human terms. He didn't talk about the victims. He didn't talk about, the American people should be stepping forward to help with donations and that sort of thing. And it wasn't that kind of a speech. It almost had this kind of campaign rally aspect to it. And that just was a little off-putting. But in terms of the actual response and the money that's flowing into Texas. And you're right, Ken. I mean, it's going to be very difficult under the current budget circumstances. They're doing a fairly good job.
Can I just expand for a second,
sure,
on what Howard just said, which I agree with completely. I agree. I mean, when the president was in Corpus Christi and gave that speech, I mean, he stands up and says, what a crowd, what a turnout. It always, always, always seems about ratings and crowd size to him, which is just so maddening. But having said that, I still think, though, that that what Howard says is very important. There was no sense of empathy in what the president had to say. Right. Nothing about victims, nothing about those who have died, those who whose lives have been ruined forever with the loss of all their possessions and pets and things like that. But, I mean, he did praise the relief workers, and they deserve tremendous praise. But I didn't, as Howard says, I didn't get a sense that there was any specific or a special sense of empathy coming from the president, and that was disappointing.
And that's what people listen for from a president, and other presidents have done that. Both of the Bushes, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama,
Ronald Reagan, in these times
mm-hmm. of natural disasters or just, you know, horrible things like 9/11.
Well, and it seems, too, like the White House is stepping up its profile in Texas. You have Mike Pence going down there. Now.
Yeah. Well, I think they may be doing it.
President Trump's planning to go back down there a second time.
Right. On Saturday, yes, and possibly to Louisiana. Vice President is supposed to be there in Texas at a small coastal town in Texas, which is just literally wiped out. I mean,
it's fair to say that when President Trump left Texas, he went straight to Missouri to give a speech where basically he's calling for tax breaks for the wealthy corporations.
Yeah.
And going from 35% to 15%. And he says, you know, middle class will benefit from that. I don't know anybody in the world who thinks middle class will benefit from huge corporation tax cuts. But again, I thought it was maybe not a great signal to talk about let's helping the rich after you leave what's, you know, the devastation of Texas.
Yeah. And isn't this tax plan going beyond, though, just corporate tax cuts, Ken? I mean, he's talking about across-the-board tax cuts, not just for corporations.
Right, but he's also talking about the maximum amount, the limit going from 39% to 20-something percent for the maximum. And again, it's the wealthiest who will benefit from that. But can I just, before we leave Texas, I don't think we're leaving Texas anytime soon, but this thing it bugs me, and I think a lot of people have said the same thing, but you know, when Hurricane Sandy was ravaging New York and New Jersey in 2013, almost every Republican, and certainly literally every Republican in Texas, except for one, including Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, they voted against the aid to New York and New Jersey for Sandy because they said, oh, there's a lot of peripheral stuff, extraneous stuff in the bill, and a lot of, you know, a lot of fat, and therefore I'm voting against it, which was, I think, a malarkey, to be honest with you. And matter of fact, Chris Christie called Ted Cruz a liar for what he said. That's how angry Chris Christie was. And this just recently he said this. But, I mean, all the Republicans in Texas and elsewhere who voted against the aid for New York and New Jersey suddenly are going to go to the Congress and say, look, we need money for Houston and Beaumont and Galveston and things like that. And they do, but the fact that they played politics about it back in 2013 and now are saying, well, you know, we need everything we can in 2017, that just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, they need the money, and the money needs to go there. But there's just some two-faced politicians around.
Absolutely.
Ken, can you give us the trivia question again, and let's see if we can get some folks to call in with an answer on this.
Well, I'm looking for the last presidential candidate who was born in Texas, who later wound up as a running mate for vice president.
And if you think you know the answer to that, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. And the first correct caller is going to win a Political Junkie button. So again, 513-419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that. So when Congress comes back from its recess, Ken, what do they have to consider in terms of relief aid for the hurricane victims? I mean, they've got the budget to consider, they've got the debt ceiling to consider, and then this just all fits into the equation. Is that right?
Well, they probably have to have a standalone special package for Harvey, which is what they tried to do with Sandy back in 2013, because I think they don't want to add it with extraneous stuff. They just want to get the money to Texas as soon as possible. But I don't know when anybody's going to be able to realize or figure out what Texas needs. I mean, of course, there's money that they need immediately, but ultimately, I mean, it's just going to be just billions and billions of dollars, which I don't think anybody anybody understands yet. But you're absolutely right. There are other things on the agenda, and of course, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who's not in good stead with President Trump, says it's absolutely not going to be a shutdown of the government. We got to pass the debt ceiling. We got to raise our debt limit. We got to have a budget. And of course, President Trump is saying, if I don't get the money for the wall, you know, the border wall, I'm going to shut down the government. And that's exactly what McConnell and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan and other Republicans say. This is not what we should be doing. We're running. We have control of the government. We have the White House and the House and the Senate, and we're going to shut down our own government. It's different when the conservatives like Ted Cruz shut it down when Obama was president over a philosophical thing. But you're basically, you run the government and you still can't get it to work. It's there, therefore, you shut it down. There's something, it just seems like if you look at the tweets, and we haven't seen many tweets lately, which is good news because of what's going on in Texas. But the president spends more time, I think, attacking his fellow Republicans than he does on Democrats. Now, yesterday he was in Missouri talking about his tax plan. And of course, while he was there, he said that, you know, if Claire McCaskill, the Democratic senator, doesn't vote for the plan, we should vote her out. And it's, you know, it's always nice to see a political speech given right after, the horrors of what happened in Texas. But having said that, it just seems like that Trump, has it in for the Republicans like Jeff Flake, like Mitch McConnell, like John McCain, like Lindsey Graham, those who, are independent of the president. And people like McConnell say, look, I got to get this government working. And the interference from the president is not helping.
And you're absolutely right. It's going to take a long time to figure out just how much help the state of Texas is going to need. I mean, this is not, we're talking about months, maybe even years.
Yeah, and I heard an initial figure the other day that I think in terms of claims that they're going to pay out, they're at $27 billion already.
Right.
That's just a starting point.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost unbelievable.
And not to mention that so many people who lost everything and have no ability to claim or get flood insurance or things like that, they've lost everything.
And if I'm President Trump, I don't really think this is the time to start picking a fight with the Republicans in Congress.
So, Ken, do you think go ahead.
I was going to just say, I just agree with Howard completely. I mean, obviously we saw what the Republicans did with Sandy,
yeah.
But I mean, I think there are a lot of Republicans who say, look, that was disgraceful and that was unfortunate, but right. That doesn't mean we're going to take it out on Texas right now. It's this is one country, and whether you're a D or an R, I mean, the flood doesn't, the flood doesn't search for victims, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or even transgender. I mean, it's,
yeah, or
know,
even illegal immigrants.
Well, that is one of the,
exactly.
That is one of the encouraging things from all this, is to see people pulling together like they are.
Oh, I agree, and especially, I mean, if any country needed it, especially in what in regard to what happened with Charlottesville and the mm-hmm. ugly confrontations there between two sides, or both sides, as the president likes to call it. I mean, the fact that you saw black and white, rich and poor, old and young, helping each other, is just heartwarming. But at the same time, reading the stories about the families who have perished is just. It's just unfathomable.
Yeah. It's heartwarming and heartbreaking
lost.
At
yeah.
the same time.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
It's,
absolutely.
That's
yeah.
a good way of putting it, Howard. We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, we have some people lined up to try the trivia question, so if you would, give us the question, and then we'll see if anybody has an answer to it.
I'm looking for the last presidential candidate born in Texas who later appeared as a running mate for vice president.
Okay, and let's start with Mark. Mark, who do you think it was?
I'm going to say Lloyd Benson.
Well, Lloyd Benson is a great guess. He was born in Mission, Texas, and of course he ran for president in 1976, and he was Dukakis' running mate in 1988. And it's a good answer, but he's not the most recent.
Okay, let's see. David, who do you think it was?
I'm going to guess it's not the most recent, and this is probably wrong. I'm going to guess Lyndon B. Johnson.
Well, that's another great guess, too. Johnson ran for president in 60 when he lost to Kennedy for the nomination. He became Kennedy's running mate. And, of course, Johnson was born in Stonewall, Texas, but he is not the most recent.
Uh-huh, that's the catch, most recent. Okay, Dave, who do you think it was?
Oh, I was going on with Lloyd Benson.
Okay. Sorry. Good try, though.
You know something? Can I just say something?
Sure.
I knew Lloyd Benson, and Dave, you're no Lloyd Benson.
Oh, Ken. All right. Let's see if Ray knows the answer to this. Ray.
Oh, I was going to say Lyndon Johnson, but that was wrong.
Okay. Not Lyndon Johnson, though. Yeah. All right. That would have been my guess, too, Ray. Let's see if Andy knows the answer. Andy?
Yeah, well, Lloyd Benson was my guess, too.
Okay. Lots of Lloyd Bensons and Lyndon Johnsons. All right. Let's see. Matt, who do you think it was?
Is it Dwight Eisenhower?
Well, Dwight Eisenhower was a good guess. He was born in Denison, Texas. People forget that he was born in Texas.
I thought he was from Kansas. Named... Yeah,
well, he was raised in Kansas.
People think he was born in Kansas. No, he was born in Texas, exactly.
Yeah.
But he never was the running mate for vice president.
So he gets a medal for knowing that that Dwight Eisenhower was born in Texas. Give the question again.
Although he was that part of that famous ticket, Ike and Tina. You remember that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So give the question again. Let's try this for another round and see if we can find somebody who knows the answer. But give that question again, Ken.
The last presidential candidate born in Texas who later wound up as a running mate for vice president.
Okay, and we'll let some people get in line here and see if we can find somebody who knows the answer to this. Let's go back. You were starting to talk before we hit the break about Charlottesville. You mentioned that. And what's the impact of Charlottesville politically? What do you see the effect being on the Republican Party? And they've got a governor's race going on in Virginia. How do you see this affecting all that?
Well, let's start with Trump first. I mean, obviously, you know, the horror of Charlottesville happened on a Friday. The president came out on Saturday talking about that both sides were responsible, and people just went ballistic over that and said, how could you talk about neo-Nazis and white supremacists and talk about the people who were there as counter-demonstrators? How do you equate the two? How do you do that? And, you know, it's very interesting that, you know, when somebody in Europe... let's just say a Muslim terrorist gets behind a wheel and plows into a crowd of people, President Trump will be on Twitter within minutes saying that this is radical Muslim extremism and needs to be condemned. But when let's face it, when a radical Ohio man gets behind a car and plows into a crowd of people, I mean, that's terrorism, and the president just seems very hesitant about condemning that. Then 2 days later, on Monday, after so much pressure was on him, he had this pained look when he read from a teleprompter saying, I condemn the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists and the Klan, and that was better, but of course everybody said it took too long. And then the following day was that unbelievable, surreal press conference in the lobby of the Trump Tower where he says, forget about it. Many sides were responsible. One side is no better than the other. And again, a lot of people thought it was a wink to, he says, look, I've condemned extremism on both sides. But, I mean, the thought of a march where people are walking around with swastikas and pictures of Hitler and Klan robes, and to say that's equal to the people who were there to just, you know, counter them, it's just beyond the pale. So that's my first thought of what Charles. But let me, before I go on, Howard, tell me what you think about that, too.
Well, the one thing that struck me on that Trump Tower statement when he was making that statement was the fact that his own White House chief of staff was standing there nearby looking at the floor. I mean, he couldn't even look at him.
His arms crossed. That was a great picture.
His arms crossed.
Right.
I mean, it was a very striking photograph or picture that said a thousand words about what he thinks of Donald Trump's rhetoric that day. And that was not helpful at all.
The other painful moment there is to Trump's immediate left was Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Transportation, who happens to be Mitch McConnell's wife. And she's standing there with a frozen smile. It seemed like she was there as a prop, but she's standing there with a frozen smile, smiling as the president is talking about these just things about, you know, the Nazis and all these things. And given the fact that Trump has disparaged, shall we say, her husband on a daily basis, the fact that she's standing there with that frozen smile was also painful to look. But I agree with you. The thought of the chief of staff, John Kelly, just standing there with his arms crossed, looking down, saying, "What did I sign up for?"
Right. And Elaine Chao, you know, basically had to stand there, and she was asked about it later and said, "Well, I support both of them."
Yeah, I have my husband and the
president.
Exactly. Now, in fairness, the conversation was ostensibly supposed to be about infrastructure, and that's why she was there, and that's why Gary Cohn and others were there to talk about infrastructure. But, you know, a few days after Charlottesville. Okay, so that's another thing. So then the Republican Party is obviously split. They, you know, a lot of them, like John McCain, for example, really, really denounced the president for insensitivity about the remarks about Charlottesville. Other Republicans, like Paul Ryan, said this is just disgraceful. So some Republicans stood up, not all of them, and certainly not many, but some did. And then you have a governor's race this year in Virginia where Terry McAuliffe, the incumbent, is term limited. In Virginia, you can't seek a second term for governor. And so the Republicans thought they had a good chance. But when Ed Gillespie is asked about what he feels about, well, first of all, if you ask him what he thinks about Charlottesville, he said it was a disgrace, and the Klan and the white supremacists are a disgrace. When you ask him about what Trump had to say, he's far more reticent to criticize him. And in fact, he's not willing to say that the monuments have to come down, the Confederate monuments have to come down. And I think one of the reasons he has to say that is because during the primary in June, he was overwhelmingly favored against this guy named Corey Stewart, who's a supporter of Confederate monuments. He ran as basically a defender of the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. Gillespie was supposed to win overwhelmingly, and it was a one-point victory. And obviously, and Corey Stewart says, "Well, you know, I'm not endorsing Gillespie yet." And so there was a large contingent of Republicans in Virginia who clearly feel that, look, whatever you think about Nazis and Klansmen and things like that, that doesn't mean the heritage, the bringing down of the monuments should happen. So Gillespie finds himself in a very, very tough spot in the aftermath of Charlottesville.
Ken, have we finally hit a point where the people who say, well, President Trump will hit a point where he starts acting more presidential? Have we hit a point where that pivot's just not going to happen?
No, and I don't lie. You know something, the people do that all the time. They say, you know, and if you go on YouTube, just search for the members of the media saying, well, you know, the president really seemed presidential this moment. And then the next day he'll say something, a tweet from another planet, and they'll say, boy, he's really disgracing the office. It's just fascinating and sad to watch these judgments of President Trump. But the fact is, Trump is Trump, and whether you have a John Kelly, whether you have a new chief of staff or not, he will do what he wants to do. Look. I'm sure his staff said pardoning Joe Arpaio sends a bad signal. But look, you know, when they had that rally in Phoenix, Trump stood up and said, you know, they went after Joe because he did his job. What he was doing was racial profiling of Latinos and in Arizona, and he did that for ages.
No, what he did was he disobeyed a judge's order.
Right. Disobeyed a judge's order, exactly.
You know, and a chief of staff like Kelly, who is probably capable of straightening out this White House staff, which has been in total chaos. I don't think he can straighten out Donald Trump, personally. I don't think there is any, you know, Donald Trump is going to be Donald Trump, and you're not going to change him. No, not John Kelly, not anybody else.
No, I agree with that completely. Although, you know, as his personal psychologist, as Trump's personal psychologist, I noticed that it was interesting that he really, unlike the health care bill, unlike the tax plan that he talked about yesterday in Missouri, he seems really interested in what's going on. Well, almost like a fan. I mean, in what's going on in Texas. And I don't say that. I'm trying to figure out the exact way to say that, but when I listen to what he says, wow, this is incredible. It's the biggest flood ever. It's remarkable. It's historic. And it almost sounds like wow, did you see Aaron Judge's home run for the Yankees? You see how far it went? It just seems like he's fascinated by it, and he wants to learn everything about it, but there is human tragedy here that I just don't think he's somehow equipped to respond to. Yeah.
Over and over again, he kept using the word epic. Epic. This was an epic thing. Epic thing. An epic event. This is not epic. This was catastrophic. This was devastating.
Yeah.
And you didn't hear those words, but you kept hearing it. Like you said, it was like almost like watching a show.
Good point.
It's an epic.
Ken, why don't you give us the question again? Because we have a full screen of people lined up to try their hand at this.
The last presidential candidate born in Texas who was later named as a running mate for vice president.
Okay. And let's see if Ann knows the answer. And I think Ann also wants to make a comment about the hurricane response. So let's start off with Ann. Go right ahead, Ann.
Well, my guess is wrong. I looked it up, and I was going to say Dick Cheney. But he was a resident of Texas when he was running for vice president.
And stick with your first answer there, Ann. So thank you. So nope, Dick Cheney is not.
But let me just say something. Dick Cheney never ran for president. That's the difference.
Right.
Yeah. And then, right. Ann, you also want to make a comment about the hurricane response.
Yeah, I was really shocked. I didn't think the response was very good. I was surprised that there was so little help from the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard only provided 5 helicopters. No other services provided assistance. I mean, it was up to individuals with inflatable mattresses and inflatable pools from their yards to actually help people. I mean, they actually have people now from Louisiana with their fishing boats going in to help rescue people. My professor from Baylor Medical School, she was on high ground, but her neighbors were covered up. And nobody could get in anywhere. And it was an extraordinary situation where I really feel like the federal government did a lousy job. And they should have been much more active. We have several military bases in that region. There's a naval base at Corpus Christi. Now, certainly they were very busy doing things they needed to do. But there should have been, I think, a much better response with surface vessels and helicopters. We've spent billions of dollars on support for counterterrorism and emergency response. And if this is the only thing we can do after spending all that money, I think we need to have a larger conversation.
Ann, thank you for the call. Ken?
No, I listened to everything she's saying. I mean, she had much more information than I'm aware of. And obviously, if that is the case, then it's just, you're absolutely right. I mean, we talk about all this money that is reserved for exactly this kind of job performance, and yet it just didn't happen. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's too soon for a final report card, but that is a damning indictment right there.
Yeah. Okay, back to the question. Let's see if Tom knows the answer to it. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
My guess is George Herbert Walker Bush.
Now, this is interesting. Thank you, Tom. I thought that everybody was going to say George Herbert Walker Bush because he did run for president in 1980, and then he was named as Reagan's running mate. The problem, though, is George Herbert Walker Bush was born in Milton, Massachusetts. His father was a Connecticut senator, a senator from Connecticut. I don't know why he was born in Massachusetts. But so Bush was born in Milton, Massachusetts, and that's why he's not the correct answer.
See, I thought that would be
everybody's first guess.
Yeah. I would have thought that, too. I would have thought George H.W. Bush as well, or Lyndon Johnson. Those would have been my two guesses. But
Lloyd Benson, right.
Yeah, both of those are wrong. Robert's going to give it a try here. Robert, go ahead.
My guess is Bob Dole's running mate in 96, Jack Kemp.
Well, he was Jack Kemp, but Jack Kemp was born in California. He was and Jack Kemp actually ran for president. Well, that's true. He did run for president in 1988, and he was Dole's running mate in 96, but he was not born in Texas.
Okay, let's see if Alan can give us the correct answer here. Alan? Go right ahead.
I've got to guess John Nance Garner from the 30s.
Well, John Nance Garner is a great answer. Actually, he was born in Detroit, Texas, where I don't know where that is. And yes, he ran for president in 32, didn't get the nomination, and became FDR's running mate. But he, like Lyndon Johnson and Lloyd Benson and others, is not the most recent. He's one of those, but he's not the most recent.
All right. And, boy, it's a tough question. Mm-hmm. Let's see if Audrey knows the answer to this. Audrey?
My guess is Carly Fiorina.
Very good.
Yay.
How did you know this? Yes, the answer is Carly Fiorina. Now,
I thought it was more expensive at first, but...
Well, here's where it's a trick question. One, very few people know this, considering the fact that she ran for the Senate from California, and now she's talking about running for the Senate from Maryland. But Carly Fiorina was born in Austin, Texas, and remember, after her presidential bid went nowhere, Ted Cruz made her his running mate, in a short-lived running mate, in 2016. Carly Fiorina is the answer.
How soon we forget.
Yay.
Audrey, very good. Congratulations.
Audrey,
very good,
sound that
Audrey.
Excited,
very
though.
Good.
And
Stay
on the line.
I am very excited.
Okay. You didn't? Okay.
Stay on the line, Audrey. We'll get the address where to send your prize to. So, congratulations. Way to go. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation, and we will continue that conversation with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we got an email from Ralph, who says he thinks that we are just bashing President Trump, and wants to know where do the Democrats stand in all of this, and... I just wanted to give you and Howard a chance to answer that if you'd like.
Well, actually, go ahead.
I was going to just say that I think I actually don't agree with those people who are bashing Trump on this. I mean, as I said, the talk about the crowds, and of course you roll your eyes, or the 6-inch heels from Melania, and or his focus on ratings. I mean, that's just Trumpisms, but as far as his response. And Anne's earlier call, I mean, she talked about some things that have really the Coast Guard has fallen down on, and I'm not aware of that. And these are important points. But from what I've seen, what I've read and watched on TV, I think the response has been good. And certainly if you compare it to Bush and Katrina, it's very good.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I don't think, we have been bashing Trump on that score. We have been a little bit critical about the tone of some of the things he said. But the fact is, the Democrats aren't in charge of anything. They're not in charge of the White House. They're not in charge of the government. They're not in charge of the Congress. And so, where does the responsibility fall? It falls with the Trump administration, and it will fall with a Republican Congress to help clean up this mess.
Ken, you were talking about the pardon of Joe Arpaio before we hit the break. And I wanted to ask, is this a way of President Trump to send a message to Robert Mueller and those that are investigating him and members of his campaign and White House staff? Is this a way of sending a message, too, that he has an absolute power of pardon and is not afraid to use it?
Well, that's a great question, and that's what a lot of people are wondering about. I mean, of course, there are some people who said that with Steve Bannon gone and Sebastian Gorka gone, and he wanted to remind his I guess nationalist supporters, Trump's nationalist supporters, that he still cares about them, and pardoning a guy like Joe Arpaio is one way of showing it, perhaps. But at the same time, there's a sense out there that by pardoning Arpaio, Donald Trump sends a signal to those who said, look, if you guys are considering talking or negotiating or surrendering to Robert Mueller, the special counsel, you don't have to say anything because I will pardon you. So, I mean, this is just conjecture, but a lot of people are saying that it was a signal to those that, remember, I can pardon anybody. The problem is, or the thing that's made this more interesting, is that in the papers today and yesterday, it was articles showing that Mueller is talking to the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, about Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn and other people like that, whereas there may be state charges involved in Manafort. And if that's the case, then Trump's pardon would not affect somebody convicted, I'm just, you know, jumping ahead, but convicted of a state crime, state charge. So if Mueller is aware that Trump may be trying to use his pardon power, which he absolutely has. I mean, there's no question that his pardon of Joe Arpaio was completely legal, just as Bill Clinton's pardon of Mark Rich, as reprehensible as that was also completely legal. Perhaps then maybe the signal is that, but if you're involved in state crimes or state transgressions, the pardon wouldn't affect you.
Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw the Politico story about Mueller kind of teaming up with the New York Attorney General. That, you know, it's a way to go after these guys. And Trump's pardon power, as Ken pointed out, in state cases, state criminal cases, well, that's not going to work. That's not going to stop anything.
And, of course, the latest story about Joe Arpaio is that at 85 years old, he's talking about running against Jeff Flake.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of conservatives who just don't like Jeff Flake, especially after that book Flake just put out, The Conscience of a Conservative. Sounds like Barry Goldwater, and it's not a coincidence. But it basically is an indictment of President Trump. And so Flake and Trump are not a best friend. Trump would love to see Flake gone. He said he said that Flake is toxic. And Kelly Ward, the conservative state senator, former state senator, who ran against McCain last year, is running again next year for 2018. And Arpaio wants to join the crowd as well. But at 85 years old, it's hard to imagine that really happening. But who knows, right?
Has he made it definite yet, Ken, or is he just saying he might?
No, he talked to the New York Examiner and the Washington Examiner, I think, and he said that I'm considering it. And, of course, a lot of anti-Flake, pro-Trump Republicans got excited about that, but who knows?
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk to Derek. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you.
My question is, you know, we're sort of not backing Trump as far as the response in Houston. But given that he's had such a hard time filling his cabinet positions and there's been so much turmoil, I'm wondering how much of the response is actually his policy or his cabinet's policy and not the previous administration. And I'll take the response off the air.
Thank you, Derek.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Trump is president, and he's been president since January, and while there are a lot of positions that are not filled, like, for example, we don't have a U.S. ambassador to South Korea, for example, which is unbelievable to me, given what's going on with North Korea. But no, this is Trump's administration. This is his FEMA, and I know there are a lot of people who say, well, this is really Obama's economy. That, you know, Trump shouldn't take credit for Obama's economy because it's still, you know, he's only been president for 7 months, 8 months, and it's Obama's policies that are working. I mean, you can pick that all you want. You can say who's responsible, but the response to Harvey to me is Trump, the Trump and his people.
And Ken, with what's going on in North Korea, there seems to be a difference of opinion between President Trump and Defense Secretary Mattis, with Trump saying there's no more room for talk with the North Koreans, but Mattis saying we're never out of diplomatic solutions.
Well, you know something, in fairness to Trump, and I know you love when I say that, but in fairness to Trump, the previous two administrations, Obama and Bush, weren't doing so well either. You know, they would try to cajole, they would try to give them some carrots and stick, and nothing worked. But Trump is just, I mean, Trump, the problem about Trump is that he can go off the deep end, as we've seen with, you know, fire and fury, that he was going to unleash fire and fury on North Korea that the world has never seen. I think Japan would disagree with that, considering what they saw in 1945. But they would say that he would do that. And then he tweeted the other day that, you know, talking is not the answer, with the obligatory exclamation point at the end. But then right after that, Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, said, look, we're never out of diplomatic solutions. And so obviously, you know, you have Rex Tillerson and you have Jim Mattis almost standing over Trump and saying, oh, no, don't go there. But I don't know what works. I don't know what the answer is. The interesting thing is that a few days ago, I think it was his speech in Phoenix, Trump was praising Kim Jong-un. His father was ill. I hope he feels better. But anyway, he basically, I'm sorry about that. His speech in Phoenix, he said that, I'm congratulating, thank you, Kim, for the restraint you're showing. And then a day later, Kim is lobbing a missile over Japan.
Right.
So nothing seems to work. I mean, you know, pressure from China doesn't seem to be working. Sanctions don't seem to be working. And I don't know, do we wait? I don't know what the answer is. Do you wait for Kim to launch a missile into Japan or Alaska or Cincinnati? No, they can't do that because, you know, then our show would be in danger. But I mean, I don't know what the answer is. And I don't think anybody knows the answer, but they do know that they fear that an intemperate Donald Trump could just say something, you know, without clearing it with his Defense Department or the State Department, that could just make the situation much worse.
Yeah, I think there's just a fear now that, you know, he could say something that would just provoke North Koreans and something would actually happen. And, you know, we have had, as Ken pointed out, the last two administrations before this, you know, have talked and talked and talked. And it's gotten us nowhere with these people. But
to Ken's point, also making threats, fire and fury, and things that doesn't seem
that
to
doesn't
work
help.
Either. It doesn't seem to faze this guy.
That's not going to help with this guy.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I want to know about Ken. Was he crazy before he became a political junkie, or did he become crazy after he became a political junkie?
Well,
I was an Episcopal clergy for 35 years, and I wasn't religious for 35 years, but I was crazy. I want to know, where did you get your craziness? At Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Dartmouth? I'm laughing my butt off at you.
Covering politics, you
that'll do it to you. You won't, Howard.
Yeah. I'm a graduate of, I don't know if you've heard of this, Disco Tech. It's a small college in I don't know if Jim is being mean or not. I'm smiling. I hope he's smiling. But yeah, there's a certain craziness here. I hope it's not bad crazy, because I mean I care about this stuff deeply, and I actually try to be temperate and thoughtful in some of my responses. Some of it just too much fun to just let go, but these are serious times, and so crazy may not be the word I'd like, but I sometimes it everything does
maybe he's
feel
talking
crazy
about your puns.
Me.
You're not crazy.
No,
you're
maybe he's talking crazy. About your bad puns.
Yeah.
How long have you
do Kim Jong-il again?
We'll have to hit you. How long have you been following politics?
Look, I didn't say anything about soul music.
That's no. Please don't go there.
Okay,
how long have you been following politics?
Well, it's almost an hour now. No, actually, in 1966, this will be very depressing, the thought of this. But in 1966, I started collecting campaign buttons, and I wrote to Ronald Reagan and Pat Brown and Nelson Rockefeller and George Romney and George Wallace, everybody who was running in 66. And around that time, I became a real political junkie. I just loved the history of it, the lore of it. On my podcast, Political Junkie, this week, for example, for all the talk about Trump attacking other Republicans and whether a president has ever done that, I have Charlie Goodell's press secretary. He was a senator from New York in 1970 who was a liberal Republican who Agnew attacked as a radical liberal. And the Christine Jorgensen of the Republican Party, named after that transgender person. So, I mean, so we have him talking about Agnew's attacks on Charlie Goodell. I have somebody talking about Franklin Roosevelt's purge of Southern Democrats in 1938. I deeply love this history. I deeply love the people who came before us, who did what they could to make the country a better place. And it's like being a baseball fan, and Howard knows that better than anybody. You know, when you talk about politics today, you talk about baseball today, you can't forget about the politics and baseball of decades ago. Now, of course, politics is more important, I mean, in the long run, than baseball, although Howard would probably disagree. But it's important, and I just respect and appreciate the history and the lore and, as I say, the people who came before.
Ken, I'm with you, absolutely. I mean, I was an 11-year-old kid, you know, sitting, watching every hour of the Republican and Democratic presidential nominating conventions in 1964. I couldn't get enough of it. You know, I will walk downtown to a newsstand and buy big stacks of out-of-town newspapers and read everything there was about politics.
Well, I can say it's an important issue.
Right.
That's the thing I get from
both
of you.
But it's something that you start, it started early on.
Yeah, it's something people need to pay attention to, though. Let's talk
to Ron. But you know something, can I just say,
go ahead.
But I do find myself being more opinionated about Donald Trump than I wish I were, because I haven't done this for so many decades. I've seen rogues and demagogues and controversial figures, and I've never been this personally critical, and I regret that I have, but I feel like if somebody has contempt for the news media and just normalcy and decency, I find myself responding in kind, and I wish I didn't. I don't, that's what I don't like. That's what I regret about me the most, aside from the fact that I'm crazy.
Let's talk to Rob. Hi, Rob.
Good afternoon.
Go right ahead.
Ken's never struck me as a crazy one. I always thought it was Howard.
Well, that's that. He agrees with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree 100%.
I do have a serious question, though. And it really comes around to, ultimately, are the progressives, are we not terribly well-served when, you know, the conversation, particularly as we talk about Harvey and the disaster and the response, you know, the Trump administration within a month had made some pretty significant rollback of standards that hadn't taken place yet that are planned to take place regarding environmental standards as part of their peel back of the Paris Climate Accords on building standards and, you know, resistance to flooding, those kinds of things. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about, you know, did he have a campaign-style rally and how high were, you know, Melania's stilettos. I just don't know how helpful that is, because it seems to me a serious conversation we need to have.
Yeah, you think it's obscuring the real issues.
It's going to happen with respect to a request for funding.
And Rob, we're coming up on the end of the show real quickly, so we need to let Ken respond here. So
thank you.
I regret that we're doing this with only a couple of minutes to go. And Rob makes a very, very good point. The fact that Houston has had unstopped growth all these decades, and of course that's one of the reasons it has affordable housing. But it's just there's few regulations. There's so much growth. It's just no zoning, no limits about anything. And certainly they're paying the price too. And another point too that, When you say, well, you have an administration that completely ignores climate change, that they want to get out of the Paris Accords, and yet when you have 50 inches of rain falling in 2 days, there's a message there somewhere. One would think you don't have to be a scientist to realize that there's something out there that's happening, and you can't ignore it. You can't ignore science. I think both of Rob's points are excellent, especially the part about Howard.
Yeah, right. Howard being the crazy one. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I agree 100%. Yeah. And Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson.